This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 1st of November 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 31st of October 2019, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: legal battle over £150 million scheme, Forge in jeopardy from restrictive planning policy, and council should be helping grassroots park project. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Yes, the legal battle over the £150 million scheme. The biggest redevelopment scheme in Winchester's history has been thrown into doubt following a legal challenge from preservation watchdogs. The City of Winchester Trust has applied for a judicial review in the High Court against the £150 million station approach scheme. The project aims to develop land between Station Hill and Gladstone Street for mainly offices, but also some shops, cafes and car parking. In a statement, the Trust said it expects its challenge to succeed. We felt that the City Council's recent decision to grant itself outline planning consent for a 200,000 square foot building on the station approach Carfax site raised too many issues that need to be challenged. Unfortunately, the only way in which a planning approval can be effectively challenged is by way of a judicial review, and after taking soundings from our trustees and others, we reluctantly commenced a legal action 3 weeks ago. The main plank of our case is that in the report to the Planning Committee, the Council failed to assess the impact of the proposal on heritage assets in the locality and on the important views across the city. There are obligations within national and local planning policies and in law that require such assessments, and to their credit, the Council quickly acknowledged that these were significant omissions. When the legal process is completed shortly, and the result will be that the decision to grant consent will be quashed, the Trust is also concerned about the way the Council proposed to develop the site. A further very worrying aspect of the case, though not amongst the legitimate grounds for a legal challenge, was the Council's intention to sell the site to a developer with outline planning permission. This would have allowed developers wide scope for altering the scheme. They would be constrained by overall dimensions and uses, but would be free to alter all the details. Theoretically, such changes could be refused at the detailed planning stage. But would this happen? And if approval were refused, wouldn't the developers get their own way on appeal? We look forward to contributing to the process moving forwards and with greater control over the outcome. We appreciate that the Council needs to make good use of this site, but we would prefer to see the gardens that were designed as part of the Hampshire Record Office retained, and the scale of the development on the remainder of the site made more sympathetic to the station and to nearby residential streets within the city's conservation area. We would also prefer the parking for any development to be as restrained as possible, to accord with the Council's commendable environmental aspirations. To consider taking such action has been a challenge for the City of Winchester Trust. The Trust added, however, we felt that the development proposed would be detrimental in so many ways to Winchester's core conservation area that action had to be taken, and a judicial review was the only way of providing the opportunity for a better and more appropriate scheme to be achieved. The challenge has loud echoes of Kim Gottlieb's legal challenge, that derailed the first Silver Hill scheme in 2016. In a statement, the council said, the council has received a pre-action protocol letter concerning the station approach development. The council has local planning authority and has responded to this matter and is waiting to hear the judgment from the court.
Forge in jeopardy from restrictive planning policy. A working forge is under threat from the very planning policies that seek to protect it. Planners have refused a unique application that will allow an artistic blacksmithing family to continue in business. William Normandale applied to remove planning conditions on Penn House at Weedy Down Forge near Warnford in the Meon Valley. He is taking over the business from his father Charles, who is stepping back from the business he founded in the early 1980s. The issue is that planning regulations tie Penn House to the forge, but that tie prevents William from securing a mortgage which will allow him to extend the current tiny property for him, his wife and child. That will enable him to carry on living on site and provide the necessary security for the business. Planning officer Sarah Toews recommended refusal at the planning committee, saying approval would technically mean a new dwelling in the countryside, which is against policy. The committee voted by 5-3 to reject the scheme. The local plan of the South Downs National Park seeks to nurture crafts in the countryside, but also aims to deter unnecessary building of homes. Speaking afterwards, Charles said he would need to speak to their planning advisers, but he added, it, the business, is under threat now because William cannot live here and is going to have to move out. It could close us down. We don't know what will happen. I'm really disappointed. We can't quite believe the planners were being so pedantic. They had the opportunity to stand up to be counted and they walked away from it. William's agent, Robert Lowe, said, Weedy Down Forge has an international reputation that's been in operation for 38 years. The National Park is fortunate to have it. The application also had the support from the Parish Council. There is no question of the property being sold off once it's extended. The Martindales say it's an integral part of the business. Local ward councillor Hugh Lumby expressed his support for the Martindales. He told the committee, I should also emphasise up front the unique set of circumstances here. Granting consent today will not be setting a precedent, as I very much doubt these circumstances will arise again. It allows us, as a council, to support our rural economy and help a family remain in the area.
Council should be helping Grassroots Park Project. A senior councillor has admitted his disappointment that the City Council is not taking the lead on a project to deliver a new multi-purpose building at a Winchester Green Space. Councillor Malcolm Prince made the admission at a cabinet meeting during discussions over the future of the River Park Leisure Centre. The cabinet member for Sport, Leisure and Communities said the local authority should be doing its utmost to support the Winchester Pavilion project, which is a grassroots movement attempting to replace the decrepit building on North Walls Recreation Ground. I am disappointed that the council is not taking or owning responsibility for the pavilion, he said. I note that although this is within the realms of the town forum, the green area is used for outdoor recreation and sport by many organisations. The ability to help fund this is certainly from this council. He added, On this, I will ask the question, are we ignoring the residents as well who have raised it a significant amount? I am sorry I am saying this, but I am passionate that we need to continue to provide outside leisure facilities for the outdoor recreation that happens and not have a prolonged wait for an unknown outcome. In response, Councillor Kelsall-Leaney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said the green space fell under the remit of the Town Forum, with the subject of pavilions due to be discussed at a meeting in November. I think it is important in this kind of context we do treat the Town Forum as we would a parish council, where it needs to consider its own financial position, its own financial resources, look at what its requirements are, and then, if necessary, it can come back to Cabinet and ask for any extra funding, she said. I don't think the Town Forum is anywhere near that yet. Councillor Leaney said the closure of River Park Leisure Centre at the end of next year added an extra complication with the loss of toilet and additional refreshment facility which cannot necessarily be met through the existing projects. As previously reported, the council-owned facility in Gordon Road is set to be replaced by the complex at Bar End, currently under construction. Councillor Leaney said, it is impractical to keep the existing building open, as has been suggested, for extra sports hall space. The combined heat and power unit is designed to run a swimming pool and almost coincidentally heats and lights the sports hall. Not only the costs involved, but with climate emergency, it would be unacceptable to keep it running. This does leave us with the issue of what to do with the building.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Baby, Michael John Baby, on the 15th of October, aged 73. Brewer, George William Douglas Brewer, at home on the 18th of October, aged 83. Eastman, formerly Nun, Wendy Chick Leanne Eastman, née Chan, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, on the 17th of October, aged 97. Edwards, Pat Patricia Edwards, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, on the 20th of October, aged 92. Falconer, Ian Perrin, at home on the 21st of October, aged 71. Greenland, Kitty Nora Greenland, on the 22nd of October at Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 93. Harris, Suzanne Christina Harris, at home on the 17th of October, aged 71. Mallion, Edward John Morris Mallion, known as Ted, in hospital on the 24th of October, aged 92. Walsh, June Walsh, née Coleman, at West Home Care Home, Winchester, on the 20th of October, aged 89. Warne, Anne Fiona Patience Warne, at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice West End on the 15th of October. And now we have Christian comment.
And this is from Liz Tatham, headed Count Our Blessings. On Tuesday night, I was privileged to be in the chapel at the University of Winchester to hear the Bishop of Cyprus and the Middle East speak about Christianity in the region, in that region. He talked about persecution, huge reductions in numbers of Christians, immigration, emigration, safety in some stable areas, and a vast complexity of the different expressions of Christianity in that complex part of the world. The only thing that would have improved it would have been a digital map, so I could have kept up as he took us on the journey. The evening concluded with the promise of prayers and thanks to the bishop and his counterparts who have served there and who give hope. Yesterday morning, I woke to hear we're going to have a general election after all on December the 12th. I can hear the sigh, but we are fortunate. We have a say and a choice. Our government only serves through our will as franchised people. Many of the people I heard about last night have no vote, no say, and become oppressed or refugees or somewhere in between. Jesus was part of an oppressed people. He lived under the rule of Rome and died on an instrument of their torture. His parents were refugees. They fled to Egypt to escape Herod's infanticide as he searched for the supposed threat to his power in the form of a baby. What are we to make of a world where there are so many differences of opportunity, wealth, justice, and safety? Two Bible verses I've heard over the past few days come to mind this morning as I write. By his bruises we are healed, Isaiah 53, which Christians interpret as a prophecy that Jesus takes and absorbs our burdens, suffering, and persecution into himself and through the cross, that instrument of torture. Suffering happened to him too, and he willingly carries ours. The second verse was quoted by the bishop on Tuesday night to open and close the lecture. For here we do not have an enduring city, but we are looking for the city that is to come. Hebrews chapter 13. The people who are fleeing or hoping to escape persecution no doubt relate to that, but it applies to us all. And those of us who have a city to dwell in safely in this life must be mindful and careful of those who do not. And that was from Liz Tatham.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or by writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, that's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. The first two letters today are from Rupert Pitt on different subjects. The third letter is a reply to an earlier letter, also replying to an earlier letter by Mr. Pitt. There are some letters, of course, inevitably discussing planning, and there are a number of letters about our MP Steve Brine. So we'll start off with the letters now.
Yes, and the first one is, as John says, from Rupert Pitt. It's entitled Unfair Market. Sir, transport is a necessity. Yet the current market is favouring the rich over the poor. A parliamentary question was asked on the 30th of June 2017 about the cost of cars, buses and trains between 1980 and 2016. It was revealed that between 1980 and 2016, the cost of motoring, including the purchase of a vehicle, went down by 20%. The cost of bus and coach fares increased by 64%, and the cost of rail fares increased by 63%. This, like the housing market, is grossly unfair. Those not rich enough to buy a car and have to use buses and trains have seen their costs increase by 63% in the last 36 years. Those who can afford a car have seen their costs go down. It encourages car use, which is wrecking our towns. Who, as a pedestrian, likes walking through a town next to a violently busy road such as St George's Street? It means we run a trade deficit as we have to import oil to pay for this. It takes up land for car parks, which can be used for housing, and destroys large parts of the countryside as motorways are built. Who has ever felt Hampshire looks better whilst driving along or next to the M3, M27 or A34? All the civil engineering skill that went into designing these roads could instead go into designing good-looking housing or public buildings. All these tarmacked roads are just dead space. Tolls could be introduced onto motorways, so the driver pays something towards the cost of the journey, as opposed to it being paid out of general taxation. If you catch a train or a bus, you pay towards the costs of the journey, so you consider if the journey is necessary. I know of one friend who travels from Winchester to Lymington to have her hair done. If there was an upfront payment in the form of a toll for this, there might be a serious reflection as to whether the journey was necessary. That's from Rupert Pitt, St Cross Road, Winchester.
And this is the second letter from Richard Pitt, headed Rich and Poor. Sir, there are important areas of our lives involving necessities which are making the rich richer and the poor poorer. In the Times, August the 20th, this article appeared, House price growth is slowing, but buying still beats renting. To quote, the monthly cost of paying the interest on a new mortgage is now 62% lower than renting, according to Capital Economics, a research consultancy. It found that the average monthly rent for a property was £859 compared with the £323 average monthly interest on a new mortgage. In comparison, between 2010 and 2018, the average interest on a mortgage was 55% lower than the average rent. Paying the interest on a mortgage in the 2000s was only 27% cheaper than paying the rent. There is something wrong in this. If you are rich enough to buy a house, it is cheaper than renting, and you will receive your money back on the sale of the house. However, if you cannot afford to buy a house, you lose the money you pay in rent. In Winchester, the average cost of renting a room is from £400 to £500 a month, so you lose approximately £6,000 a year. This is grossly unfair on those who are not rich enough to buy a house. The housing market is not a free market, unlike, say, computers, cars or clothes, where you can usually buy what you can afford. The housing market is a rigged market, as supply is limited by planning laws. What is needed are stable house prices, and I believe that Professor Danny Dorling of Oxford University has written a paper showing the prices in Berlin did not rise for 30 years. There should be a tax on the gain in house prices. It has not been earned, as the seller of the property has not earned this money. He has relied on the purchaser borrowing more money. There is already a tax to pay on the gain in share prices. Why not on property? The money raised should be spent on social housing, so those who are not rich enough to buy a house do not lose their earnings in paying rent. Rupert Pitt, St Cross Road, Winchester.
And this one is from a Mr R. Whittier, called Necessary. Sir, having read Mr Rupert Pitt's letter in the Chronicle, October 17th, I have to take issue with his analogy of the situation. Firstly, he writes about the more road you have, the more vehicles will fill the space. Secondly, on the construction of new carriageways or enlarging existing ones. Surely, what is not appreciated is that Junction 9 of the M3 is an intersection, and what should have been done at construction is what is proposed now. We are in a state of climate change, and what we don't need is traffic queuing on the A34, spewing out noxious fumes, spreading across Kingsworthy and the Itchen Valley. Notably, Mr. Pitt has an address in St. Cross, and as I've mentioned before, living south of Junction 9 won't encounter the smell. Surely the city of Winchester will be grateful when it's complete, with less traffic throwing through the town. Hopefully accidents not accounted for. And this is from Mr. R. Whittier, Church Lane, Easton.
This fourth letter is not from Rupert Pitt, nor does it refer to any letter he may have written in the past. It's from Jill Prince, and it's entitled, What Can and Can't Be Recycled? Sir, I read Ewan Worthington's letter entitled Backward Step in the Chronicle on October the 18th, and was puzzled by the reference to contraction of items which can be recycled. I have lived in Winchester since before recycling was introduced and have no recollection of items such as aluminium foil and food packaging ever being recycled here. I beg your pardon. I have a list of items dated 2006 which clearly states they should be taken to the household recycling centre or placed in the rubbish bin. A very large proportion of our household waste is incinerated to produce electricity. If Mr. Worthington has been placing foil and food packaging in his recycling bin, then he's been contaminating the contents. There will always be more that can be done to reduce waste and protect the planet, but saying there has been a backward step is completely wrong. That's from Jill Prince, Linway, Kingsworthy.
And this is a letter from Timothy Hart entitled High Street Extinction. Sir, reading the front page of last week's Chronicle, it appears the recent visit by the misinformed hypocrites or Extinction Rebellion has inspired some at the council offices to form their own party, High Street Extinction. I am referring in the main of the plan to stop free parking on Sundays and to charge for evening stays after 6 p.m. Sunday has become the day to visit Winchester, with people arriving early to peruse the various vibrant markets, shop at their leisure, then dine in the pubs and restaurants, followed by a bit of sightseeing. The key phrase here is at their leisure, because they don't have to worry about how long it all takes as parking is free. If the decision were to visit was made on shopping alone, I am sure Southampton, Basingstoke or Gun Wharf Quays would win hands down. But Winchester has a unique ambiance and the free parking is probably the tipping factor to most families. At least Mr. Mills Godlett appears to be of sound mind, so all is not entirely lost. Finally, speaking as one about to be bracketed in the ever-increasing ageing population numbers, reducing toilet provision in the city, visited by several old codgers' coach parties every week, really. Timothy Hart, Maytree Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And this letter from Simon Lever is headed Congestion. Sir, regarding parking and accompanying traffic congestion, Winchester is an ancient city and not designed for automobiles, buses and related traffic. There is a balance between reducing pollution levels and maintaining a vibrant city centre with local businesses and markets, Chronicle, October 24th. Raising park and ride charges is the opposite of what should be considered. Applying parking fees on evenings and weekends is another matter, but there must be very careful consideration. In reality, some people need to enter the city to pick up items too heavy or large. And what of wheelchair access? The bus service is excellent and should be promoted, as should park and ride, not by increasing charges, but making it even more attractive to use. Pollution-free electric vehicles will gradually become the norm. Will the council still apply extra charges in the name of the environment or helping to balance the books? To protect small businesses from a potential downturn in revenue, business rates should be dramatically reduced. There are so many positive aspects to Winchester, and reasonable ease of access is one. Realism and effectiveness and common sense must come into play. There is general agreement that the volume of traffic exacerbated by the one-way system should be addressed. Perhaps the City Council could launch a multi-party public discussion encompassing businesses, residents and visitors in order to reach a sustainable and positive solution. And this is from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Winchester.
This letter from Jay Anderson is entitled In Denial. Sir, it was comforting to read last week that Steve Brine MP has reassured children at Westgate School that the government is, quote, taking steps towards making a more eco-friendly nation, unquote. I hope their teachers are helping them look more critically at the government's actual performance, which has mainly been about undermining attempts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, e.g. by continuing to subsidise fossil fuels, reducing subsidies to renewables, supporting road and airport expansion, and failing to do anything meaningful about hugely damaging agricultural systems. Steve's personal contribution in the form of his voting record on climate legislation was exposed in a report by The Guardian recently, which showed that of 13 climate-related votes for which he was present, he voted pro-climate in only two. It's about time Steve started telling his worried constituents the truth. Following declarations of climate emergency at all levels, he urgently needs to spell out what he and the government intend to do to prevent the impending ecological disaster. Denial is getting us precisely nowhere. That's from J. Anderson, Oxford Road, Sutton Scotney.
A letter from Patrick Davies, MP's New Roles. Sir, the letter from Westminster column from Steve Brine, MP, Chronicle, October the 24th, has much to say about the NHS and his previous position as a health minister. It is surely astonishing that at no point in this article does he mention his recently acquired highly lucrative interests in two health and pharmaceutical companies, for which he can now earn almost £40,000 per annum on top of his MP's salary. Is this what his constituents expect from their MP? Mr. Brine's entries in the Parliamentary Register read as follows. From 31st of August 2019 until further notice, event speaker for Sigma Pharmaceuticals. I receive £1,667 a month for speeches, networking and question and answer sessions. Hours, 16 hours per month. Registered 25th of September 2019. From 10th of September 2019 until further notice, strategic advisor to Remedium Partners, permanent healthcare recruitment. I receive £1,600 a month. Hours, 16 hours per month. I consulted ACOBA about this appointment. Registered 25th of September 2019. Mr. Brine has not explained why or how he decided to take up these highly paid extra jobs. Winchester's constituents deserve an explanation. Patrick Davies, Staple Gardens, Winchester.
And this is a further letter on our MP's new roles. Sir, I am disappointed to see that Winchester MP Steve Brine is cashing in on the consequences of policies he supported while a government minister. In the Register of Members' Interests, he records acting as a strategic advisor to Remedium Partners, permanent healthcare recruitment, for £1,600 for 16 hours per month. Also as an event speaker for Sigma Pharmaceuticals, receiving £1,667 for 16 hours per month to give speeches, networking and question and answer sessions, £100 per hour is more than most people could ever imagine. Remedium Partners makes money by recruiting staff from overseas more cheaply than local staff. While he was a minister at the Department of Health, he pursued policies that made working in the health service less attractive. In addition, many EU staff have left the NHS due to the hostile environment following the referendum, resulting in shortages of doctors and nurses. MPs get generous redundancy support when they lose their seat. An honourable MP should be focused on representing their constituents to the best of their ability, rather than feathering their own nest. And this is from Mike Collis, from Lovedown Lane, Kingsworthy.
This letter is entitled Only One Answer, and it's from William Vine. And strangely, it's about a local MP called Steve Brine. Sir, it's a great disappointment that after Steve Brine's reservations over the latest and hardest of proposed Brexits, that he not only voted for it, Parliament having specifically and repeatedly legislated to prevent a no-deal exit, but also for it to be driven through Parliament without proper scrutiny by our democratically elected representatives. More pertinently, how does he consider this appalling version of Brexit, far more draconian in its impact than anything proposed in 2016, offers anything at all to Remainers, where it not only shuts us out of our richest, closest and largest markets, removes social and environmental protections, undermines the Good Friday Agreement that brought an end to the Troubles, and their 3,000 UK citizens murdered, and carries a very high risk of breaking up the United Kingdom. If he believes that this ultra-hard Brexit offers anything other than pain, hardship and distress to the majority of his Remain voting constituents, then he either takes us for complete fools, or he hasn't paid the remotest attention to anything we've been saying in the last 4 years, neither of which is wise in his position. How can he equate this with gaining losers' consent of the 48% who voted to remain in 2016, let alone the 55% average that polls now show want to remain? The one thing that would achieve such consent is a people's vote on the facts as they are now presented, which represent a considerably worse outcome for this country than scenarios that were branded Project Fear in 2016. If leavers are confident that they are still a majority, they have nothing to fear from a confirmatory referendum. And if they are no longer in a majority, then the government avoids driving the country off a cliff. A people's vote is the only democratic way to bring about healing of the bitter divide that the Conservative Party has cleaved in our society. That letter's from William Vine, Ilex Close, Kingsworthy.
This is a letter from Karen Williams on school funding. Sir, schools all over Winchester will be astounded at the article last week listing their funding increases. On closer inspection, a small increase on last year's inadequate funding masks the reality that schools have suffered huge funding cuts over the past few years. Jobs have been cut, class sizes have increased, subjects have disappeared from the curriculum, and schools have set up wish lists for essentials such as paper. Schools do their very best for pupils in the face of diminishing resources, but they need much better funding to give the current generations of students the education they need. These increases, which do not match inflation in many cases, and in others are actually cuts, are just sticking plaster. The website schoolcuts.org.uk provides all the data needed to inform your readers of the crisis in our local schools' funding, and I urge them to engage with local politicians to end this educational lottery, which disadvantages so many. Karen Williams, St Faith's Road, St Cross, Winchester.
And this is a letter from James Anderson, headed Deadly Brexit. Sir, the Winchester Labour Party talks of a deadly Brexit, Peter Rees Chronicle Letters, October the 24th. The party believes that the EU is its ally in socialist policies and in workers' rights. There are Labour figures that are better informed than this. The ex-chairman of the General Federation of Trade Unions, Doug Nicholls, said EU membership has embedded the neoliberal capitalist agenda in constitutional form. Tony Benn described it as a banker's ramp. The European Court of Justice has consistently prioritised capital over labour, for example, in the Viking case and the Laval case. The ECJ ruled that collective action was unlawful if it damaged the employer's interests. It ruled that a construction company was entitled to replace workers with Latvian workers paid 40% less. Recent ECJ rulings have begun to nullify UK job protection laws. By the way, UK job protections are homegrown and not EU-inspired, again, contrary to Labour's beliefs. Labour cannot pursue the radical socialist industrial strategy that Macdonald wants under EU state aid, competition and market rules. Of all parties, it is Labour that might be expected to want a clean break. We are then in that most curious of territories. The party of socialism is voting for the dominance of capitalism, while the supposedly capitalist conservatives are voting against market rampant capitalism. The Lib Dems are hell-bent on Remain, and by implication, rampant capitalism, though most seem ignorant of the link. Can that really be the majority Winchester view? Please consider, so very few of those expressing opinions appear to have done any meaningful research on the EU, its articles, its implications, and its track record. And that is from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Unviable UK, writes Jeff N. Barrett. Sir, since 2016, the government has done its best to carry out the wishes of the sensible people of the UK, but had a relentless task against the opposition parties and some of their own. And the EU also proved it is not a democratic governing body by not working with us. We know how to do our things, not to be told that doesn't work. Question for Remainers. If we continue to pay ridiculous sums of money to the EU and our imports far exceed our exports, running at a loss, how can the UK remain a viable country? Not very long. We will end up like Greece. That's from Jeff N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Alsford.
We now have items of historical interest from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago, and that will then be followed by Chronicle comment. There is no letter from Winchester this week, letter from Westminster this week, nor a first person item.
200 years ago, Monday, November the 1st, 1819. It is 18 years since a fall of snow took place at such an early period as it has done this year. And, what is even more remarkable, the fall happened precisely on the same day of the year, October the 21st.
100 years ago, Saturday, November the 1st, 1919. Yesterday afternoon, the children of the elementary schools of the city, who have been successful in passing the tests for proficiency certificates in the art of natation, together with those who had won prizes in the competitions, received the same at the hands of the mayor. The ancient order of shepherds of the city revived their annual dinner this year, the event being held in the Guildhall on Thursday evening, and it was memorable from the fact that, for the first time, ladies were present. An excellent menu was provided by Messrs. Dumpers Limited, and at the conclusion of the same, the mayor gave a loyal toast.
50 years ago, Saturday, November the 1st, 1969. A Better Deal for Widows is the latest crusade by the Hampshire Federation of Women's Institutes. The attack is being made on two controversial fronts, pensions and prescription charges. At the Federation's autumn council meeting in Winchester on Wednesday, the members agreed to campaign for legislation to make widows eligible for pension at the age of 45 and to press for exemption from prescription charges for widows at the age of 60 who are receiving their pension. This also applies to women on retirement pensions. The pensions resolution was tabled by Loxheath WI and seconded by Stubbington and Hillhead. The Loxheath delegate and numerous other speakers spoke of the hardships of widows under the age of 60, some with children at school. Money was one major problem.
25 years ago, Friday, October the 28th, 1994. Winchester's notorious Stinkpot Hill is in bad odour once again. The pong from the sewage treatment works at Morstead Road, just east of the city, was so bad recently that one man and his wife were forced out of their home for several hours to escape the stench. Civil engineer Anthony Lusted, who lives with his wife at Bar End Road, has written to Southern Water's drainage manager, John Whittingham, to complain. He has written to the company in the past and discussed the problem on site with company representatives. In his latest letter, Mr. Lustig says there has been little significant change regarding the awful smell emanating from the works. The strength of the smell from the works during Friday the 14th and Saturday the 15th, October 1994, surely passed the level that I reported in my previous letter. Indeed, it was so bad that my wife and I went out for Saturday evening to avoid the stench. Mr. Lustig said it was amazed Southern Water was unable to do anything, considering the amount of investment on so-called technical improvements. He added that it must be a continued source of discomfort to those responsible for tourism in the city to have the unenviable reputation of having the smelliest main road entry, the M3/A272 combination, of any famous historic UK city.
And this is the editorial comment. Will anything ever get done in this city? Does one laugh or cry at our front page news that the City of Winchester Trust is taking legal action against the City Council over the development of Station Approach? The 150 million scheme would see a mainly office development next to the Record Office. The City of Winchester Trust argues that the scheme is too big and is seeking a judicial review of the planning permission given earlier this year. There is little doubt that the successful legal action by Councillor Kim Gottlieb against the City Council's Silver Hill scheme in 2016 will have been a factor in the Trust's decision. The Chronicle partly agrees with the Trust's view about the gargantuan size of the Station Approach scheme. But we also have concerns that Winchester is in danger of becoming paralysed, of having the situations where almost nothing can get done because people or organisations with deep pockets have the resources to try to derail projects. Without stretching the comparison too far, the deadlock in Winchester has similarities with the Brexit impasse we are all growing tired of in Westminster.
There are no special announcements this week. Lighting up times. Sunrise is at 7 o'clock in the morning and the sun is setting at about 4:30 in the afternoon. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have a problem with any of the recordings you have received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And that's 01962 711 998. We now move on to items of general news interest.
And the first article is entitled Community Projects to Benefit from £1.3 million Pot. A total of £1.3 million has been committed to projects across Winchester using contributions from building developers. Winchester City Council's Cabinet signed off on the allocation of Community Infrastructure CIL, funding to various applicants and schemes. After receiving 22 applications for financial support, Council has approved the sum of £635,000 to 12 projects all over the district. This included funding for a Scout and Community Hall project, footway and crossing schemes and play equipment. A further £675,000 was pledged to Winchester City Council uses for the South Downs Way and Black Path access works, Chilcombe Sports Pavilion improvements and Station Approach Public Realm improvements. However, the latter has been set aside provisionally and will be reviewed in 12 months due to the legal challenge as reported in the Chronicle. Discussing the CIL allocations for the community, Councillor Jackie Porter, Cabinet Member for Built Environment, said, "There are 12 that are agreed here, and they are very specifically from the whole district, and they include a number of different reasons for giving approval. They were all judged on the availability to the whole community, the benefit to the whole community, the deliverability, including the ability of the applicant to deliver that plan, and whether they fitted the general CIL criteria which cover the regulations. This has given an opportunity for an extension of community facilities to improve walking and cycling, hopefully in the process of improving our carbon footprint, and starts a programme of new facilities for young people. We welcome more of these in the future." Councillor Porter said those applicants who had not been successful this time would be approached to further explore their projects. She said, "We aren't just leaving those people that have been refused in limbo after this. We are going back to them to discuss how they could improve those applications and whether they would choose to reapply with the knowledge of why their application was refused." The full list of projects receiving CIL funding will be available on the Chronicle's website.
Better pruning. New equipment which speeds up the pruning process of overgrown branches on Hampshire's road network is being used by Hampshire Highways teams. Using battery-powered train saws and working from a raised tractor platform, teams are pruning overgrown trees along key bus routes to prevent damage to vehicles. Councillor Rob Humby, County Council's Deputy Leader and Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, who saw the new tractor and trailer in action, said, "This essential work prevents overgrown, low-hanging branches damaging buses and keeps passengers safe." In the past, highways teams have had to use a cherry picker to get to some of the higher branches. But the mobility of the new tractor and trailer system means there is no need for road closures. It means highways teams can make routes safe for buses while keeping disruption to drivers to a minimum. "I'm pleased to see that Hampshire is continuing to buck the national trend with more people taking the bus to get around. This helps congestion at busy times and in turn helps improve air quality. It's important we do what we can to continue to make bus travel an attractive and viable transport option for people who live and work in Hampshire. And this is just one of the many ways we are helping to do this. Bus operators work with the County Council Highways teams to identify hot spots for treating."
police warning about con men imposters. Police have issued advice after several people in Winchester and Fair Oak were scammed for money by fake police officers. One of these scam incidents involved a man from Winchester who received a call from a man claiming to work for the Metropolitan Police. The caller said he was investigating the 77-year-old victim's bank for counterfeit currency and instructed the victim to withdraw money on Monday, October the 21st. The victim withdrew the money and gave £4,100 to the fraudster, who later visited his home. Later, the victim was called again and asked to withdraw a further £2,000. However, he became suspicious and called the police. The cold caller was described as black, of slim build, around 5'11" tall, and aged in his 20s or 30s. Officers said they have also received similar reports of incidents, including another in Winchester and one in Fair Oak on Wednesday, October the 23rd. On these occasions, the victims were called by someone claiming to be D.C. Simmons from Hammersmith Police Station. A spokesman for Hampshire Constabulary said, "This is a common scam in which often older or more vulnerable people are targeted. We would like to remind people that officers, banks, or any other authority figures will never call in this way. If you do get a call from someone who claims you need to withdraw money from a bank, hang up and report it, using a different phone if possible. It will be a scam. Make a note of the date and time of the call and the number if available. This information could help any future investigation. Never reveal your bank details or give personal information to people who cold call. If you know somebody who could be taken in by such a scam, please take the time to speak to them and give them our advice."
And this next piece is connected with that. It's entitled Braille ID Badges. Firefighters in Hampshire have been asked to use Braille IDs in a bid to break down barriers between them and visually impaired residents. Councillors have asked bosses at Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service to provide staff members, including firefighters, with Braille identification badges. They say Braille IDs will particularly help when firefighters inspect residents' homes. Councillor Roger Price, a member of the HFRA Standards and Governance Committee, said Braille IDs are already being used by police officers in London. At a meeting held last Tuesday, the committee asked Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service to look into providing staff with Braille IDs. After the meeting, Chairman of the committee, Councillor Liz Fairhurst, said, "You only have to stop and think how vulnerable a person with limited sight is when opening the door and there's someone saying, 'I'm a firefighter.' How much they have to take on faith. It must be quite scaring." Councillor Fairhurst said every year firefighters inspect thousands of homes across the county. The so-called safe and well visits are aimed at ensuring that properties are safe, that there are no hazards and fire alarms work correctly. Matt Robertson, Director of Corporate Service at HFRS, said the service is looking into upgrading access and identification badges next year.
Countryside charities set to oppose housing proposals. CPRE, the Countryside Charity Hampshire, has come out against development on sites near Alton, including villages near Alsford. CPRE Hampshire has recently responded to the public consultation on large development sites by East Hampshire District Council. After a visit to all the sites by a team of the East Hampshire Planning Group volunteers, CPRE Hampshire has assessed the proposed large development sites at Chalton Park Farm, Alton, Neatham Down, Alton, south of Winchester, Royal Four Marks, and a large, sorry, beg your pardon, south of Winchester Road, 4 miles in a large part of Northbrook Park, Bentley, as being within tracts of countryside which are valued landscapes and so should not be developed. However, CPRE Hampshire has supported the development of the site at White Hill Borden as one that would be largely brownfield and would take advantage of the employment opportunities. A new town centre and other facilities already built or planned within the new settlement, which is replacing the Borden garrison. If another large development site is required from the remaining 5 sites, then CPRE Hampshire recommend it should be allocated as a reserve site to be developed only if shown to be required. Christopher Napier of CPRE Hampshire said the 4 sites in open countryside bordering the A31 at Alton, Four Marks and Northbrook are within landscapes of high quality which, as valued landscapes, we consider should be excluded from further consideration as sites for large development. The CPRE says it is not against development that enhances a thriving countryside. We support projects that offer benefits to communities, such as genuinely affordable housing solutions. According to planning guidance, new developments should be located so as to protect and enhance valued and high-quality landscapes. In these valued landscapes, development should be restricted, as the social and economic benefit of development would be significantly outweighed by the environmental harm. A valued landscape must be of a quality beyond ordinary countryside.
County hate crimes reach record levels. Hate crime has reached record levels in Hampshire, with police logging 7 offences a day. Charity bosses and faith leaders have called for urgent action to tackle hate crime, with a rise in incidents showing no sign of slowing nationally. Hampshire Police recorded 2,726 such crimes in 2018-2019. The latest Home Office statistics show up 1% year on year. The rise continues the upward trend seen since records began in 2012-13, when officers logged 1,121. Reports can include racially or religiously aggravated assault, harassment, and criminal damage. 2/3 of reports in Hampshire related to race, while 15% featured hostility towards sexual orientation. Across England and Wales, police recorded more than 103,000 hate crimes, a 10% rise on the previous year, and more than double the 42,000 recorded in 2012-13. The Home Office attributes this steady rise, in part, down to improvements in the way crimes are recorded. Spikes in reporting after events such as the EU referendum in 2016 and terror attacks the following year also contributed, it said. Another unexplained jump over the summer of 2018 and again in January this year, however, may reflect a real rise in recorded hate crimes, statisticians added. Assistant Chief Constable Mark Hamilton, the National Police Chief's Council lead on hate crime, said, "We recognise there are real divisions in our society at this time, and there is a responsibility on us all to think carefully and be temperate in how we communicate with each other to avoid escalating tensions." Citizens UK, an umbrella organisation of faith and community groups, said its research suggests levels of hate crime are far higher than those recorded in official data. Their open letter, which expressed deep concern at the rising tide of fear and division, featured 18 bishops, imams, and rabbis as signatories. Matthew Bolton, Citizen UK's executive director, said communities from across the UK are increasingly concerned that we aren't going fast enough or far enough to strengthen hate crime protections.
Chris honours great uncle with skydive. An optician's laboratory manager had a sight to savour as he successfully completed a skydive for charity, channeling the spirit of his late great uncle. Chris Cornell, who works at Specsavers in Winchester, took part in the big jump for the Royal National Institute of Blind, the RNIB. The challenge offered a strong family connection on his way to raising more than £800 for the charity. His great uncle, Sidney Cornell, was in the 7th Battalion Parachute Regiment. Mr. Cornell faced his nerves, including a fear of heights, at Old Sarum Airfield near Salisbury, Winchester. He said it seemed a fitting tribute to my great uncle Sidney to do a tandem skydive for such a good cause in his honour, even though I hate heights. I know how amazing the work that the RNIB does is, and I'm really pleased I was able to do my bit to support them. Krupesh Bacha, store director at Specsavers Winchester, said, "We are all really proud of Chris for having taken on this challenge."
National chain returning to City Street. A national shoe shop chain is returning to Winchester nearly 2 years after closing down. Jones Bootmaker, which occupied a prime spot in the square, shut its doors last January after the company was purchased by Pavers Shoes. At the time, a sign on the door said, "Hopefully we will return to Winchester sometime in the future." Now the store is set to reopen in the same road. Caroline Shaw, area manager of Jones Bootmaker, said, "We are thrilled to return to Winchester city centre. We know shoppers have requested this for a while and we're delighted to finally make their wish come true with amazing quality shoes and timeless style." The store will be selling footwear collections from major brands including Echo, Bugatti, Gabor and Barber. Jones Bootmaker began in 1857 in London when Alfred Jones and his wife Emma opened their first footwear shop. Parents to 11 sons and 3 daughters, the Jones were a large pioneering family and first traders to install electric lighting into their shops. Each of the Jones sons were apprenticed to the shoe trade, subsequently opening their own stores, trading under the name of Jones Bootmaker. These stores found success by introducing stocks of ready-made shoes in 3 different widths, initiating a new tradition in shoe fitting industry that is still used today.
County grape harvest completed amid rain. The final harvest of the year is now in. The vineyards of Hampshire have been busy with picking the grapes, largely done by workers from Southeast Europe. Rain's English Sparkling were busy last week with the grape harvest in their 2 Cheriton vineyards. Along with other vineyards in Hampshire, they've been dodging the wet weather in October to harvest their champagne grapes. "The rain has been a challenge for us this late in the season," said proprietor Augusta Rames, "but we are pleased to have finished now and can have a well-deserved glass of fizz." The reputation of sparkling English wine continues to grow, and some of the top French producers are said to be looking to purchase land in central Hampshire for their own vineyards to capitalise on the chalky soil, which is very similar to that of Champagne region in eastern France. And there's a whole series of pictures with lovely crates of green grapes there, and 2 very handsome Jack Russells keeping an eye on the whole proceedings.
Prison moves out of special measures. Winchester Prison is out of special measures after showing improvement in a number of areas. The jail, which has been heavily criticised by inspectors, has shown it is getting on top of violence, drug abuse and low staff morale. The news comes as the prison has been featured on the recent Channel 4 series Crime and Punishment, which portrayed the prison last year at a time of low staffing and instability. But now managers and staff provided increased confidence in several areas, including staff retention, improvements to the regime, and a resulting reduction in all measures of violence and self-harm. The recent outbreak of violence when inmates broke out of their cells and ran amok on a wing has not derailed the lifting of special measures. Speaking from the pulpit of the recent Law Sunday service to a congregation of legal professionals and volunteers at Winchester Cathedral, Reverend Jonathan Aitken, former MP, prisoner, and now prison chaplain, reflected on the recent TV documentary series. He said, "Although the Channel 4 coverage gave off a bad smell, it was not all bad news. For example, the heroes and heroines of the series were the Winchester prison officers." He added, "And I assert with some confidence that HMP Winchester is becoming a recovery situation. Although it still has some way to go, this recovery has already achieved many tangible results. Violence, self-harming, drug abuse and officer resignations are all falling, and the staff are growing in competence and confidence." Deputy Governor Susie Richardson said, "We are delighted to have received confirmation that we are now out of special measures, having been able to give the organisation sufficient confidence in the direction of travel. We recognise that we still have much to do in embedding the progress made so far and to continue to improve in order to become a really good local prison. And there are more challenging headlines to come with the publication of our summer 2019 HMIP inspection due in mid-November."
Martin's to close after more than 38 years. A Winchester convenience store is closing after being in competition with a national supermarket for 10 years. Martin's in Stony Lane will shut for good on November the 1st. The owning company, McColl's, has decided that it sees nothing else for the store's future. Manager Simon Lambell, who joined as a supervisor 7 years ago, says there has been a slow decline in the business. "If you spend a tenner in Waitrose over the road, you get a free newspaper. Of course, people are more likely to go to the place where you can buy everything you need at once. And for that reason, I think that's why the company have decided to call it a day. They told me they've decided that the store's future has nothing else." Simon will be moving into a new role at the cooperative just along the road. It is unknown what will replace Martin's, but Simon would not be surprised if it was a takeaway shop. A McColl spokesman person said, "We are saddened to no longer be operating the store, and our priority has been to support all affected colleagues."
Post office closes ahead of schedule. Post office staff have called upon the local community to help save the Chandlesford outlet from closure. The Fryon Arcade Post Office closed last week after staff and residents say they were given almost no notice. Last Monday, staff closed early in protest and have been advising customers to contact the people responsible in the head office. Residents have already begun signing a petition to keep it open. Aaron Joseph, who's been running the post office for a year, is angry. He said, "It is a very busy, profitable post office, and it's incredible that they can shut it down with this little notice. They're taking all of the equipment and computers immediately. They need to either reinstate the previous postmaster, like they said, or I'm happy to run it until they find another suitable applicant." A post office statement said, "We were preparing for the post office to temporarily close on October the 23rd due to the resignation of the postmaster."
Parents launch campaign for safe crossing. Parents and residents in Hairstock are campaigning for a pedestrian crossing close to the local primary school. The stretch of Prior's Dean Road is the main route for pupils walking to and from Harestock Primary School each day, with parents nervous about the poor visibility from the nearby bus stop. To help raise their concerns with Hampshire County Council, campaigners have asked for the support of Winchester Downlands County Councillor Jan Warwick. Councillor Warwick said, "I'm so impressed by the overwhelming support from local residents wishing to improve the safety for their support, I beg your pardon, for the safety for their children crossing Prior's Dean Road each day. They were keen to demonstrate the difficulty crossing this road safely at peak times of day. I will raise this issue with Hampshire County Council's school travel team." With pupils' numbers now around 243, it means that more children and parents on foot at school opening and closing times, as well as a significant increase in traffic. Mother of three, Sarah Burbridge, added, "There's a well-used informal crossing point close to the shops and bus stop. However, the bus stop makes the visibility poor when a vehicle pulls in and other vehicles overtake. We are nervous of letting the older children cross this road to walk to school on an otherwise safe route without an adult to accompany them." The group has also taken their campaign to social media and have set up a Facebook page dedicated to the cause.
Companion uses upcycling skills to World Public Sculpture. An ex-homeless companion of Emmaus, Hampshire, has helped to create a public sculpture at the newly opened Handlebar Cafe with local artist Nadine Collinson. The companion, Frank, a bricklayer by trade, was selected by Nadine to assist with her project after she heard about his skilled upcycling of furniture for the Emmaus shop in Winchester. Frank welded the skeleton of the bikes while Nadine worked around him. They created the sculpture in Nadine's purpose-built studio in her garden. Local students added their contribution by painting the piece. Nadine states, "I'm all about inclusion. I think it is important to get a variety of people involved in my projects, which is why I wanted to work with Emmaus for the sculpture." Frank found the experience really rewarding, saying it was a great opportunity to be let go from my routine and go on an excursion to the studio. As a self-entitled hands-on person, the project enabled Frank to use his skills in a creative way while contributing to the local community.
Progress for City's Hospice. A busy fundraising season for Winchester Hospice came to a successful close with a sold-out evening of fundraising on the HMS Victory and the news that building will soon begin. The event on board Lord Nelson's flagship raised £20,000 and was attended by the First Sea Lord, Admiral Tony Radakin. Guests also got the chance to go on a private tour of the Mary Rose. Thanks to the fundraising efforts of the entire community, builders have now been appointed and work is due to begin in early December. It is hoped that Winchester Hospice will open its doors in early 2021. But a further £1 million needs to be raised, and there are plenty of ways to get involved. Dr. Lara Alloway, a consultant in palliative medicine and chief medical officer at Hampshire Hospitals, which will run Winchester Hospice, said, "We are incredibly excited that the building works are due to start shortly, and are so thankful to everyone who's given their time or generously donated to help make this a reality. We aren't at our fundraising total yet, so I would encourage everybody to get behind Winchester Hospice and be part of our story. Access to local hospice services and having a place for families to be together at such a critical time is invaluable. And we know this will make a huge difference to the local community in Winchester when the hospice opens."
Hospital parking fees make £6 million. Hospitals in Hampshire have made more than £6 million in a year from parking fees. New figures have revealed that in the last financial year, patients and visitors who parked at hospitals in Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke brought a total of 1,698,974 pounds into Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust's coffer, whilst the trust also made £62,000 pounds from staff. The rest of the £6 million figure is split between Solent NHS Trust and University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust. Representatives have said concessions are available for some patients and visitors, whilst staff members are supported through a number of schemes. But the charges have been described as morally wrong, with watchdogs saying hospitals should provide free parking. In a statement, the Patients Association said, "Charges for car parking at hospitals are a charge on people who are unwell, levied on them because they are unwell. We believe that patients should not be effectively charged for being ill. Parking at hospitals for patients, carers and visitors should be provided free of charge. However, parking charges currently generate revenue for hospitals at a time when their finances are under immense pressure. Car parking charges should be removed once a full and sustainable funding settlement for the NHS has been secured and delivered." Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, said free parking is available for a number of patients and visitors, including those attending chemotherapy and visitors to patients in the intensive care or neonatal units. She said, "Patients and visitors who receive income support or other similar benefits can reclaim transport costs as part of the government healthcare travel scheme, whilst free parking is available for all disabled and blue badge holders in designated spaces at all three of our hospitals. We do not charge staff to park in the dedicated staff car parks at our hospitals. A small number have chosen to pay for a limited number of premium parking spaces that are available at our Basingstoke and Winchester sites, with the proceeds going to our Winchester Hospice appeal. We do not contract out any parking services to private companies."
Simply Health confirms job cuts after staff consultation. Job losses have been confirmed at one of Winchester's biggest employers, but exact numbers have yet to be revealed. Simply Health, which employs 250 staff in Victoria Road, last week completed a 45-day consultation with staff over a proposal to axe as many as 195 jobs. The provider of health, dental and pet health plans has not stated where the redundancies could hit or the exact number, but it has said that it is now informing employees who have been impacted by the changes. Richard Gillies, Chief Operating Officer, said Simply Health is moving forwards a new model to help us meet the rapidly changing healthcare needs of our customers. This has meant a reshape of our current team so we have the right skills and expertise within the business to support our own long-term business goals. Last week, we concluded a period of collective consultation with employee representatives and have now started to confirm outcomes for any employees working in roles impacted by the changes. It is believed the plan could see the firm move some Winchester staff to Andover. Mr. Gillies continued, "We continue to do everything we can to explore alternative options for those employees at risk of redundancy within the Simply Health business, as well as supporting those employees who will be leaving us over the coming weeks. These changes have not been undertaken lightly and are part of our investment in the future success of the Simply Health business and brand." Simply Health merged with Denplan in 2017, with the latter becoming known as Simply Health Professionals.
Tenant scheme. Winchester City Council is launching a rental exchange scheme which can benefit tenants who pay their rent on time by potentially improving their credit score. Having a good credit report and online proof of identity is increasingly important when applying for goods and services. A good credit rating can show companies that someone is a reliable potential customer and make it quicker and easier to apply for a mortgage, arrange for better utility tariffs, and have a loan application approved, get a credit card, and receive better mobile phone rates. The new rental exchange scheme will enable tenants who pay their rent on time to benefit in the same way that homeowners do with their mortgage payments, by improving their credit file and ability to assess various credit facilities. Cabinet members for Housing and Asset Management, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, said most of our city council tenants pay their rent on time, and we'd like to reward all those that do that. This new initiative can provide a real benefit to our tenants.
MP criticised. Winchester MP Steve Brine has come under fire for taking on private work in the health sector. The MP, who resigned his junior health ministerial post in the spring, has taken on part-time work with Remedium Partners, a recruitment agency for the NHS, and also for Sigma Pharmaceuticals. The Register of Members' Interests shows that Mr. Brine could earn up to £40,000 a year for the work. Patrick Davis, former leader of the Labour Group on the City Council, said of the MP's letter from Westminster column in the Chronicle, "It is surely astonishing that at no point in this article," I do beg your pardon, "it is surely astonishing that at no point in this article does he mention his recently acquired highly lucrative interests in two health and pharmaceutical companies for which he can now, in quotes, earn almost £40,000 per annum on top of his MP's salary. Is this what his constituents expect from their MP?" Mr. Brine asked for comment, emailed yesterday, "All outside interests are registered as per all the rules. Adding up theoretical day rates is not what it seems, if only." He has, however, had the party whip returned to him, which means he will be the party's candidate at the general election scheduled for December the 12th. It had been removed because he had rebelled against the party line on Brexit. He said, "I have always done what I think is right, in the best interests of my constituency and our country, without fear or favour. Some will agree, some will not. But being an experienced MP is always about using your judgment and showing independence of mind. It's been a difficult few months, but I was very pleased to have the whip restored, which shows the Conservative Party remains the broad church it must always be."
Candidates chosen for Meon Valley MP. The two main candidates in the Meon Valley constituency have been selected for the general election. Sir George Hollingbury has been unanimously re-adopted as the Conservative candidate to fight the seat on December the 12th. Lewis North has been chosen by the Lib Dems. Originally from Cheriton near Alresford, he has twice fought city council seats within the constituency. The constituency's Conservatives Association, MVCA, confirmed Mr. Hollingbury's appointment following a recent secret ballot on party members at Meon Hall in Meonstoke. Sir George has been the MP since the constituency's inception in 2010. At the 2017 general election, his majority was 25,692. He said, "I'm thrilled to be formally re-adopted as the Conservative candidate for this fantastic place and look forward to an election campaign when it is announced. To represent the Meon Valley for the last 9 years has been a real honour, and I hope to be able to do so in the next Parliament. I pledge to continue to support my constituents in every way I can. be an effective voice for the many excellent businesses in the Mian Valley and a champion for the rural economy and the environment. Lewis North slashed the Tory majority from 882 to 124 at last September's City Council Mian Valley by-election. He said, "We are going to mount the biggest challenge to the Conservatives that the Mian Valley has ever seen. I believe voters will respond well to having a local and energetic candidate who was born and raised in the Mian Valley and is devoted to our area. This election really counts. It doesn't have to be another 5 years of Conservative cuts and austerity. We can change the future direction of this country." MVCA chairman Owen Edwards added, "Since he was elected in 2010, George has been a fantastic MP for the Mian Valley. He has faced some of the most difficult political times and has always been a strong and principled voice for our area."
Further arrests in murder probe. Two more arrests have been made in relation to the murder inquiry in Corehampton, bringing the total to 17. The body of Gurinderjit Rai, a devoted and loving father of two from Eastleigh, was found in Shepherd's Farm Lane in July. He had died as a result of shotgun wounds, with police believing it was a targeted incident. Now, a 30-year-old man from Eastleigh has been arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to murder, and a 32-year-old Oliver's Battery woman on suspicion of assisting an offender. Both have been released from custody, but remain under investigation. They join 15 others who've been arrested as part of the investigation, including a man in his 50s from South Wales. As previously reported, Aston Hannis, 28, of Winchester, was jailed for 12 months after he refused to hand over the passcode to his phone to police as part of their investigation.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. Thanks to our readers, Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.